We, the students of Kensington Public School, would like to acknowledge the Bidjigal and Gadigal clans of the Eora Nation, where this podcast has been produced. We pay respect to the elders past and present as they hold the language, culture and traditions of the local Aboriginal people today.
From Kensington Public School in Sydney, Australia, this is Small Voices, Big Ideas.
My name is Marley.
And I'm Abby.
Small Voices, Big Ideas is a podcast produced and featuring students, staff and the community of Kensington Public School.
It's our chance to look into things that affect us, now and in the future.
Abby, can you believe that next year we're in high school?
It's exciting and a bit scary. Although we are 12, we don't get a say in the future, even though people in power are making decisions on our behalf.
In Small Voices, Big Ideas, we can tell them what we think, or at least investigate the big issues.
Too right, Marley. So put on your headphones or turn up your speakers. This is Small Voices, Big Ideas. In today's episode, we dive deep into the biggest issue affecting the future, the environment.
Later, Abby and I will speak with Tim Winton. I'm a bit nervous, aren't you?
A little bit. They say he is a national treasure. I'm not really sure what that means, but I do know that I love reading Blueback.
Margaret, Maya, Rosie and Ace talk to our community about their opinions on the environment now and in the future. So, Abby, there is lots to look forward to, but first, Ace and Ali are sitting by the ocean looking for answers.
You are listening to Small Voices, Big Ideas.
Ace, how often do you come to the beach?
As much as I can. I love the water.
So do I. Did you see that?
That whale came so close to the shore. I can't believe we used to hunt them.
They are so beautiful. But you know, they are still in danger because of global warming, rising sea levels, the loss of icy polar habitats, and the decline in food sources make it hard for them.
Well, it's us humans causing the problem, burning fossil fuels and other things that cause global warming and making the Earth hotter. If things continue as they are now, where we'll be sitting will be underwater. Imagine what things would look like if we were all underwater now.
That would be terrible. I see so many houses underwater. The whole of our city is immersed.
Some countries in the Pacific will cease to exist. Let's swim back to the surface.
Some animals and sea creatures will become extinct because they find it impossible to live in the warmer temperatures, and others will lose their source of food.
But it's not just global warming. Plastic waste ends up in the ocean and all the animals eat it. Some choke on it. There is so much to worry about.
There is, but we can also do things to change things and make our future sustainable. What are you doing, Ace?
I'm picking up some plastic. I don't want the whales to swallow it.
Let me help.
More voices, big ideas, please report to the office.
We'd like to welcome legendary author and national treasure Tim Winton to the Small Voices, Big Ideas podcast.
Where did you go to primary school? And what was the highlight of it?
I went to North Scarborough Primary School in the 1960s, which, if you can believe that, it's a long time ago. Well, I used to probably think that the highlight was the walk home, but that's probably not true. I like reading stories and telling stories, and so I guess I liked English, and we had this pilot program. We did German in the starting from third grade. I like the languages, but I also like writing stories.
You obviously learned a lot at school. How did you become a writer?
I just loved reading and I loved being in stories, so I just I wanted to stay close to them, and so I just wrote them myself, and somehow I went from school to university and I was writing stories at university, and I started publishing them while I was still at university.
What do you do now?
Well, I'm still doing it. I'm a freelance writer, which means I work for myself, and I've done that for over 40 years. It's the only full-time job I've ever had, apart from being a parent. pretty strange way to make a living.
Where do you live?
I live in the northwest of WA, sort of where the desert meets the sea, the sort of far left corner of the map, and it's a sort of a long way from anywhere.
We love your books, and we have all read and studied Blueback this year. What inspired you to write it?
Well, I'm glad you liked it. I'm not even sure really what inspired me to write it. Very long time ago. I guess it was a way of remembering part of my life as a kid, the way I saw the world when I was much younger. It was like going back in time. I think I was always happiest when I was in the ocean or close to the ocean. And for a few years when I was about, I guess, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, I used to have family holidays at a beach shack up the coast. And I guess Abel's life is a bit like what I imagined mine would be like if I could live in a place like that all the time. Yeah, it was like a step back in time.
How long did it take to write?
It only took me a week, which is very rare. I mean, it's probably the happiest writing experience of my life. You know, some books take me 7 years or longer, and this book was just, it came out really quick, you know, and so it's one of my favourites just because it was one of the easiest.
The character that your book was named after is the blue groper called Blueback. One of the beaches near our school, Clovelly, has a famous blue groper called Bluey. Thankfully, this year, the government brought in a law protecting blue gropers from being caught. What is it that appealed to you about blue gropers from your book Blueback?
Yeah, look, I think it's great that that the government was doing work to protect blue gropers. I guess when I was a teenager, I used to snorkel, you know, where there were blue gropers on the south coast. And I guess I loved how big and beautiful and curious they are. And it's pretty amazing being in the water with something that big, especially when you get the sense that it's aware, you know, it's conscious, it learns. And I guess since then I've been lucky enough to have lots of experiences with much bigger animals, you know, like sharks and whales and dugongs and manta rays. And they're all creatures that seem to recognise you and learn and respond to you. And that's, I think that's pretty great. It sort of reminds you of how wonderful the world is and how lucky we are to be here.
You have written many books and they get adapted in plays and movies. What is it like to see your creations on the big screen?
It's pretty strange, I have to say. Because, you know, it's always somebody else's response to your story. And sometimes that's a wonderful experience, and sometimes, to be honest, it's a little bit excruciating. But seeing Blueback on screen was one of the happy experiences. And to be honest, I thought the fish wouldn't work. I was kind of worried about how they were going to do that, but I thought it was brilliant. You'd never know that what you're seeing on screen is basically an underwater puppet. I thought it was brilliant.
One of the themes of Blueback is about managing how humans and nature coexist. But we don't seem to be doing a good job of this. We are really worried about the effect that humanity is having on the environment. How do you feel about the current state of the environment?
Well, I think you're right to be worried. The science is telling us that we're facing an extinction crisis. That is, that we're, you know, forcing all kinds of plants and animals out of existence, which is terrible. And that we're in a climate emergency because of all the coal and oil and gas that we're burning, which is really, really dangerous. So I'm very concerned. And to be honest, I'm angry about it because we know it's happening. We can observe it and we can measure it. It's real. We're not responding seriously to it.
Is it too late to stop the negative impacts of global warming?
Well, it is late, no question. Science shows that we've already heated the world up to dangerous levels. We're already past or around 1.5 degrees of heating, and that's a huge problem. It's already messing up our weather, and it's making it harder to grow food, and it's increasing the intensity of bushfires and storms and floods, and that's bad. But at that level, it's survivable. But if we don't change what we're doing, we'll reach 3 degrees of warming, which is, you know, on current trends, scientists are saying we're headed for just under 3 degrees of warming, and that's horrible. That'll probably be a world without coral reefs or blue gropers and certainly no houses by the beach. It'll be a bit like a science fiction movie. But it's not too late. If we stop burning fossil fuels, if we cleaner energy and adopt a a gentler way of living in the world. We can avoid the worst of it. But, and, you know, we have the ability to do this. We just need, we need the will.
Do you think we are doing enough to change the effects of global warming?
No, I think we're not doing nearly enough. And the world's climate scientists have made that very clear. And sadly, Australia's got a bad reputation globally on this.
It is a global issue, and Australia is just one country. If we make changes, what can we do if other countries don't change their habits, especially poorer countries who may not have the ability to change?
Yeah, well, a lot of countries have changed their habits and are changing their habits. We're one of the stragglers. In fact, we're one of the biggest polluters. We export more fossil fuels than most other countries in the world. But every country needs to do their bit. If someone's house is on fire, you rush out to help to put it out, you know. You don't wait until all your neighbours are awake to, you know, help out before you lend a hand. I mean, do you say, oh, my neighbours aren't helping, so why should I? You know, is that a moral thing to do? Doesn't that reduce the chances of putting the fire out? I think we should be leaders and help inspire others. Because brave people, honest people, they're the people who inspire others. Brave country, an honest country, inspires others. It doesn't hide and whinge about what the neighbours aren't doing. I guess there's only one certainty about fighting climate change, that if we do nothing, we lose the world. And that means we lose the future. I think we have to do everything we can to help our neighbours. And that means, you know, we have lots of technology that we can make available. And also we have to remember that it's the richer countries in the world who've had the most benefit from burning fossil fuels. And we have a higher responsibility to help those other poorer countries and some of those particularly Pacific countries who haven't made all that money from fossil fuels but who are bearing the brunt of fossil fuels. I think we need to be good neighbours.
Australia is a wealthy country, but much of its wealth comes from industries that are big greenhouse gas producers, like coal mining and agriculture, like meat production. If we stop doing these things, won't many people lose jobs and won't our standard of living plummet?
That's a tough issue, but I think we need to transition. We need to make changes that we know will be costly, that we know will be difficult. You know, every form of change is difficult. And some industries might disappear and some will just change their ways of doing business. I think energy is probably the biggest issue. I don't think necessarily. I think agriculture has ways of changing. Energy generation has to radically change. I think we'll see forms of agriculture that are like what we know today. But forms of generating electricity, for instance, you know, some forms will just disappear because they'll have to. It's more expensive to stay doing what we're doing. We'll inevitably lower our cost of living if we just keep doing business as usual.
So what are things we can do now in our community? Anything our school or families can do on a local level?
Well, it's a good question, but I think we have to remind ourselves that the big changes are going to be made by governments. You know, governments will need to make businesses change what they're doing, how we generate energy, how we run our economy. But governments need to be encouraged by us, you and me, the people, to take fast action. And to do that, we need to team up with others to make our voices louder and, I guess, more united. That's how every good social change has been achieved in this country and in all countries, not just by individuals, but by groups of like-minded people who help each other out. And look, you know, there are a lot of national and local and international climate groups run by and for young people. There are a lot of young people who get together to write letters to members of parliament. They organise marches. They report on what they're seeing and experiencing. And that, you know, there's families and sports groups, churches, all kinds of avenues of action. And you might already be aware of this, but it was a bunch of school kids, Anjali Sharma and her friends, who took the government to the High Court, insisting that the government has a duty of care to young people when it comes to decisions about the environment, particularly decisions that affect the climate. They lost that case, but they're now pushing for a duty of care bill in the federal parliament, and that's being sponsored by Senator David Pocock on their behalf, which I think is great. And worth remembering that when those kids got started, they were only a few years older than you guys. Greta Thunberg was only a school kid. You know, she started a global youth climate movement. She was persistent. Lots of people found her irritating. But persistent, irritating people, people who stick to their principles, these are the folks who've created positive change in our world. And I think it's good to remember that.
You wrote Blueback soon after you helped save the Ningaloo Reef from development. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was a little bit like it was a strange experience. I mean, I wrote this story about these people saving an ecosystem and preventing a species from being locally extinct. And then not long after, I ended up sort of inhabiting my own story in a way. So it was I guess I learnt a lot from that period in the early 2000s, you know, when we saved the reef from a huge inappropriate marina development. You know, we were just a tiny group of friends and colleagues, and it started from 3, 4, 5 people, and then it turned out to be hundreds of thousands of people helping us out, creating a kind of a movement. And that was pretty great. I guess I learnt what you can do if you join up with other people and get together, and you can create change. As a result, you know, the reef became put onto the World Heritage List, and that's been great. We still have ongoing struggles, but I think it was something that we can look back and say that we're all proud of doing, and it was a sort of a high point for us.
Tim, we asked this of all our guests. We are 12 years old and don't even get a vote. Do you think us kids should be asked for our input when adults who are in position of power are making decisions for us?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Of course kids should be consulted, because all the decisions that are being made about your future. So I see that as a moral obligation. I think it's one that my generation has neglected, and that's something that I'm deeply ashamed about. One of my personal heroes was a quiet little guy, a little church minister in the 1940s, who spoke out against fascism. He was a German, and he spoke out against Hitler and the Nazis. And he said that you can judge a society by the kind of world that it leaves to its children, which I think is true. His name was Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He wrote that in prison just before he was murdered by the Nazis. And I think of that a lot, you know. So I think kids have a right to be upset and angry about what's being done, and they have a right to speak up and tell the adults in power that they're not doing enough about climate in particular. And you have a right to expect that the people who are meant to protect you to show some honesty and some courage.
In 50 years' time, in 2074, what do you think the world will be like?
A tough question. Hotter, I'm afraid. I think the science has made that clear. But I'm hoping we'll be smart, all of us, and that we will have done what it takes to keep the world livable, you know, by then. By which I mean a planet that's beautiful and alive and inspiring. I've got a lot invested in this. I'll be gone by then. But I have 6 grandkids. And by then, I guess, who knows how many great-grandkids. And they'll be in that world. So I'm hoping to do everything in my power to make sure it's a good world in 2074, and I hope you will too. Hi, my name's Tim Winton. We're listening to Small Voices, Big Ideas.
Wow, Tim Winton, what a legend.
It was such a privilege to speak to him.
I loved how he spoke to us like we were his peers. He didn't speak to us like we were little kids.
Rosie, Margaret, Maya and Ace have polled the community to see their take on the state of the environment.
So let's hear what our parents, teachers and fellow students have to say.
Small voices, big ideas.
I try my best to do what I can at home, and we try to reduce our waste and recycle appropriately with our council.
How do you feel about the current state of the environment?
The environment, well, there's definitely a lot more we can do to clean it up and whatnot. Yeah.
How do you think other people can help the environment?
I don't know, it's a good question. They can recycle more, they can invest in more sustainable products, I suppose.
Well, I think there's a lot of young people that are doing a lot of good things for the environment and talking about it. In my days, when I was much younger, we didn't really think about that.
How do you think people can help the environment?
Well, I think people can help the environment by taking care of the things that they buy, and obviously recycling, and picking up other people's rubbish and putting it in the bin.
Is there anything that you do to help the environment?
I live in an apartment and I recycle all the paper and plastics that I could possibly do.
How do you feel about the current state of the environment?
It definitely needs improvement or initiatives coming from the community, government and political landscape to improve our environment, yes.
What do you personally do to help the environment?
Oh, I do what I can. So in terms of recycling, that's a big part. And we also compost daily. And also we, as much as we can, we don't use plastics at home. And if we do, it's always recycled. And we have electric car.
How do you think people can help the environment?
First, they should be educated, you know, about how they should stop polluting. Like using, reusing, recycling, discouraging use of plastics.
Are you worried about the fate of our environment?
Yes, because everyone's polluting and like not everyone's helping very much. I just think more people could help pick up rubbish off the floor.
What do you do daily to help the environment?
Picking up rubbish.
How can we play our part in saving the environment?
We can stop plastic use, we can recycle, and we don't always have to use like plastic bags. You could use like reusable ones.
Do you think everybody should play a part in helping the environment?
Absolutely. It's really important that we all play a role so that we can protect our Earth and make sure that we have the planet Earth for generations to come.
Abby, I think we have a long way to go to fix the environment.
Our parents' generations haven't made it easy for us, but I'm optimistic and we can do something to change things.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to Small Voices, Big Ideas. We love making it, that's for sure.
Small Voices, Big Ideas is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all of your favourite podcast platforms.
Please write and review us and let your family and friends know about our podcast.
This episode of Small Voices, Big Ideas was made by Marley, Ace, Ali and Rosie,
as well as Maya, Margaret and Abby.
We'd like to give a big thumbs up to the author, environmentalist and all-round great guy, Tim Winton, as well as all the parents, teachers and students from Kensington Public School who shared their opinions on the environment.
Thanks to Rob Caldor, the executive producer of Small Voices, Big Ideas and our podcast teacher.
We'd also like to thank SBS and their team for giving us the opportunity to make this podcast. Until next time, I'm Abby.
And I'm Marley.